I don't know if it's wise for us to be seen talking.
Oh, I can take a bit of tittle-tattle.
Well, you're an old rhino. I'm just a flighty little sparrow.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Succession. I'm David Chen, and joining me, as always, she is editor-at-large at primetimer.com and co-host of Extra Hot Great, Tara Ariana. How are you doing today, Tara?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm well, and having recovered from last week's episode, ready to dive into Season 2, Episode 6 of Succession. And yes. I'll just say it was very gratifying to hear, you know, we voiced our reaction to last week's episode on the podcast, and I've spoken with multiple people who had similar reactions about how absolutely uncomfortable it was, how they couldn't even finish watching it, they had to stop. Like, I think our reaction was very similar to the public at large's reaction to that episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not on Twitter while it's airing usually because I'm like, you know, paying attention. But yeah, it was wild to see everybody else afterwards, like just screaming at last week's episode.
Like every episode of Succession will age you, you know, 7 years basically.
That was Catherine Van Arendonk from Vulture, and I agree.
It's just like, I knew I'd read that somewhere. And it is intense. And so, I had a lot of questions about where the show would go, you know, from that point. And I think we are going to find out in our recap for this week's episode, Season 2, Episode 6, Our Jesties. Now, before we get to this episode, I do want to read an email that we got. This email comes in from Vigard Vito. Vigard Vito? I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it. But Vigard writes in, just found this amazing show on HBO and have started following your great podcast too. I wanted to throw out a quick suggestion for another segment you could do weekly, best quote of the episode. To me, this show has some of the best lines on television right now, a personal favorite being when Gil says, "I'm in a knife fight here and I'm holding a dildo made of American cheese." I'd love to hear yours as well, no matter if they are profound points about characters or just hilarious quips. Great suggestion, Vigard. And so starting this episode, at the end, we usually do our winners and losers of the week. Following that, we're also going to be doing our quote of the week. So, that is a new segment. Now, there's three segments. The recap, the winners and losers, and quote of the week. That's what you have to look forward to. Let's dive into this week's episode, Season 2, Episode 6. Tara, what happens?
Well, yes, thank you. We're circling the runway. We've just gotten permission to land. We've been in the air for an hour, so now it's time. Deal-making with the Pierces is underway, but it's taking longer than Logan would like. A delegation from Waystar is on its way to Argestes, which seems to be the in-universe equivalent of the Sun Valley Conference. And since Stewie and Sandy are going to be there, Logan would really like to stick it to them by announcing the Pierce deal during the retreat. And the show's portrayal of Logan shitting on Kendall and Kendall taking that energy and diffusing it to the whole legal team in the back of the plane, I felt was a little on the nose compared to what we generally expect from this show. Let's hear a little bit of that.
When can we expect something in my hand?
Imminently.
Like when?
Soon. For confidentiality, leak protection, we kept the circle small. Everyone's spread pretty thin.
It's not fucking good enough. You're fucking me here. I'm making good faith fucking assessments to my father, and you're making me look like a hack, and I will not have it. Stop sucking each other off back here and get fucking on it. You pour the shit I'm pouring on you, on your fucking minions, and you ride them. I don't care. 24 hours, rolling shifts, crack the fucking whip. Everything you're doing is fucking bullshit, and I'm very disappointed in you. I swear to God I will fucking fire you if you keep monkeying around. Put the fucking snacks away. I don't want to fucking hear it!
We've been circling for a fucking hour.
Tell them we're running out of gas!
But you disagree. Let's discuss. Let's fight.
Well, I think that this is actually a really critical moment because whatever you're seeing coming out of Kendall at this point, it does feel to me more authentic and more frightening than anything we've ever seen from him in the past. Right? And he has tried to rally the troops before, to disastrous consequences. Like, remember the speech he gave all of his lieutenants, in like episode 2 or 3 of season 1, when he's like, Vulture is a lifeboat, you know, like that kind of thing. Like, he's generally really bad at that kind of thing. And and then to see him do this, which is like, actually, I could genuinely see being frightened of this person if I was one of his underlings in this situation, felt to me like yet another part of the evolution we're seeing of Kendall, from completely inefficacious to now he actually might be developing some skills now that he's given up all his dignity as a result of the events of season one.
Well, I mean, that is true, but I'm not sure I agree that this shows he's efficacious. He's certainly more angry. And in recent days, he's certainly seen that Logan's anger gets results. You know, we saw that with him, with Logan walking out of Turnhaven at the last episode, saying that he wasn't going to meet any of their demands, and still getting everything he wanted, or so it seemed at that time. But, you know, knowing that Kendall is on the other side of a small divider from Logan, who's like having his own rage fight right now, like, to me, it seemed performative. And when they showed the main guy that he was yelling at, that guy didn't really seem that impressed either. I mean, he was surprised. This is not very Kendall behavior. You're right that Kendall's usual manner is like this kind of like servile,
like a tryhard, you know, is how
totally.
I'd
describe it. Yes. Yeah. He's always trying to make people like him. Kendall really in the past has wanted people to think he's cool.
Yeah.
And this is not a guy who wants people to think he's cool.
Yeah, he's given all that up. He's given all that up. That's what I'm saying, you know, like.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I don't know. I felt like it didn't. He was trying something on, and I don't think he totally sold it to the legal guys personally. All right.
Fair enough. So what happens next?
So not attending our Jesties is Shiv, still back in New York, learning her new job, whatever that actually is. Neither she nor Frank seems to know. And she is petulantly ditching a meeting to go play hooky when Carolina rushes past her to Frank and gasps, "It's Cruises." So we'll get back to that. But I feel like it's important that we see Shiv acting like she's above learning how to do a job at Waystar, including the boring stuff, because it reminds us as viewers that although she better knows how to behave in general, she is exactly as spoiled and childish as any of her siblings are, even though she seems more polished.
I think you're right about that. I was listening to our episode last week recapping the show, and you brought up the point about how I, David Chen, have thought that Shiv deserves it the most, but that this season she has not clothed herself in glory, right? Mm-hmm. With how she's acted. And I think you're right that like this is peeling back the layers of Shiv, and you're realizing that hey, in some respects she's actually not that skilled. Mm-hmm. In some respects she is actually very much like her siblings, and we see that. You know, we have this Slack group for one of my podcasts, the Slash Filmcast, and I saw a pretty interesting theory on there in our Succession discussion channel on that Slack about how I'll just read the comment here from Mark in the Slack group. Mm-hmm. He says, "Shiv was set up in season one as the only one of the children that was beyond the manipulations of Logan. The arc this season has shown that was simply because he had left her alone. But when mm-hmm. he really needed her on the team, i.e. the planned takeover of Pierce, he could easily manipulate her back into the fold."
Yep.
So I thought that was interesting, that basically like one could read it as Logan maybe never even intended to give Shiv the CEO position, right? And mm-hmm. that maybe he knew he was playing 3D chess. He was looking like 8 moves ahead, that he would need Shiv in the fold somehow, and that Shiv proved to be like far more difficult to contain than mm-hmm. he originally thought. And that this is another this scene being another example of that. What do you think?
Yeah, it also reminds us that like even within this episode. You know, I was talking about in episode 4 when Logan and Kendall have the meeting with Rhea, how different Logan is than we've ever seen him before, that he's very deferential to her. He's polite. He's like gentle. He's quiet. He's, you know, very courtly with her because he knows that he needs to get her on side. And the rest of the time, he's just like a child throwing tantrums. And this is the same thing like with Shiv. Also with Rhea later in the episode, we'll see it that she knows how to make a great impression. But with Frank, because she knows she doesn't have to, she's just a brat.
Mm.
Anyway,
I think that's right, and it's unbecoming. You know, it's not a good look for her. Not a good look.
No. I mean, the larger question is like, could anyone who grew up in that environment have transcended it?
Right.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Certainly these assholes didn't, but anyway. At our Jesties, Greg, Ari has to tell Tom bad news about the tagline for a presentation that Tom will be giving the next day.
When it got circulated, Legal and Comms wanted you to be aware that maybe we shouldn't go with ATN, we're listening.
Oh, okay. I mean, I really do like we're listening. It sounds like we're listening.
No, sure. It's just, there's apparently in the EPG on the set-top boxes, the voice activation mode. It does, there's a gray area in terms of our data collection so that we are kind of like, we actually are listening.
We're listening?
It's complicated, but yeah, it seems that we are sometimes listening quite aggressively.
We are listening?
Yeah. But it's just to like maximize the user experience. But if that was to break, maybe.
Oh, fuck.
So, yeah. So the question is it a smart thing for you to be saying we're listening when we are indeed listening?
Why was I not aware of this?
Well, it's basically legal, the guy said. But he didn't want to put that in an email.
Ripped from the headlines, that one. But let's put a pin in that for now. Back to cruises. No one knows exactly what's going on, but New York Magazine is doing a story about some allegations, and it doesn't sound good. Now the Roys are on a clock. They need to lock down the Pierce deal before the story comes out, and the Pierces, who already thought the Roys were vulgar, are finally so appalled that they decide to back out. Bad. The only Waystar comms person on the trip is Hugo Baker, played by Fisher Stevens, from the Parks and Cruises division, who is very obviously incompetent. Worse, Kendall and Roman, as co-COOs, are supposed to give a presentation on the next day about, of all things, family ownership and corporate continuity in the digital age. But although Kendall insists that he can handle it, most of the sensible people in the room agree that having two men give the immediate response to a sex scandal is not going to look great for the company. Can Shiv fly in? On the phone, she pouts about not having been invited in the first place, but of course she goes. And one of the first things she does after landing is cock-block Tom at a party and try to put new restraints on whom he's allowed to have sex with under their arrangement. A fellow Argestes attendee is off-limits, according to Shiv, because she's a real person, someone with a face, end quote. Shiv later backs off this prohibition, but still good to know where her head is at with it, including that she tells Tom she was jealous seeing him talk to this accomplished, elegant woman.
Let me pause here for a moment, Tara. Let me ask you about this strategizing around this New York Magazine story. I'm curious, because one thing I think is really interesting about this episode is it attempts to depict what a corporate strategic response would be to a story like this, which honestly is just not something we see very often in public.
Right.
Right. Like this kind of stuff happens behind closed doors, and people usually see the result of it, but they don't see the rationale behind it. And I'm curious, like, how did it strike you in terms of its plausibility? Like the argument that would go back and forth of, like, you know, do we deny? Do we promise we're not going to do it again? Do we say, you know, like all the kind of back dealing and all the strategizing? Like, did that strike you as true to life or, you know, plausible? What do you think?
I mean, fortunately, I can't speak to that from personal experience on either side, but I do think it's a very timely story for this show to cover because of how recent revelations about various bad actors and bad corporations and bad corporate cultures of the past couple of years, especially since the Weinstein story came out about, you know, 2 years ago, I guess at this point, that the exposure of these stories also exposes the cover-ups. And so now I think we do know more as civilians about how that happens. Like, you get a catch and kill story where it's like you buy the rights to it, or you know, how you prevent a tabloid from covering it, and how you get your lawyers to intimidate people that are trying to tell the truth, or you buy them off, or, you know, there's NDAs and all this stuff. That definitely was, if you watch The Loudest Voice, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago, that's definitely was a tool in the Fox News arsenal as well. But yeah, I mean, this does seem logical, where it's like, there's only so many ways you can play a story like this. Either you're defiant about it, or you act like it's no big deal, or you know, come up with a very contrite version of, like, we feel bad, but nothing is actually going to change. And I think these conversations in the episode definitely show the range of responses that are available to a corporation that finds themselves complicit in something like this, both the people that knew about it, because it seems like Logan did. We got that intimation at the funeral episode that he used to run wild with Mo and others. And the people that didn't, like, you know, Jerry had some vague knowledge, it seems like, but didn't know the details. And then Shiv, like, just had zero idea about anything. And so, yeah, I do like how these scenes play out of showing the debate that would happen. It does seem true to life to me. Did it to you?
Yeah. First of all, maybe that's where Logan got all the scars on his back. Was all that? No, I'm just sure. I have no idea. but the thing I'm going to say is just that what I thought was great about this sequence is how it illustrates the game theory components of a response like this, right?
Yeah.
Which is they are saying, like, okay, like, should we cooperate? Like, if we cooperate, like, what will happen? You know, if you are on either side of that equation, your objective is to give as little information to the other party as possible, right? Because what the Roys do not want to do is, in communicating things and being open and therefore receiving information, they don't want to then convey way more information than New York Magazine already had. You know what I mean? And I thought it was really fascinating the way that this, you know, this episode captured that uncertainty of they have something, we don't know what it is, and how much we, like, if we divulge things, we may get something in return, like a more favorable story. But then what if we divulge something that they don't already know? Then like, we're worse off. And so I liked that this idea of game theorying this out of, like, okay, well, we could do this, but that means they'll do this, but that means we'll do this. I thought that was, I won't say accurate, but I'll just say that it made for very compelling viewing. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's also interesting to get Shiv's perspective on this as someone who is in politics, because she certainly would know how to control leaks and how to manage leaks out of your campaign.
Yeah.
That you want to cultivate reporters in a certain way without giving away too much that's going to be damaging. So, like, you give a little leak that seems a little bit scandalous to try to head them off reporting on something that's worse.
Exactly. You know? I just find it so fascinating. You know, it's fascinating to me, like, how this information is managed and, like, how much you give and what you get for it. So that all that stuff I found really interesting. And it's also pretty hilarious that Shiv was trying to do the strategizing while in what seemed to be an extremely filthy bathroom. and she, like, accidentally activates the hand dryer. We've all been there.
Yeah. So. But this also seems like it's on a continuum from, you know, the crisis response in the season one finale when Kendall killed someone or was complicit in the death of someone, where it's like there, it's greater and less degrees of the process of keeping people who can afford to be insulated from trouble. I also think it's interesting that we see Logan check in with Marcia to make sure that she's not going to leave him when the scandal strikes, but also that he is reassured by her answer, which is, when I am with someone, I am with them. Which to me doesn't preclude her leaving any time, but, you know, sure, whatever works. She is where she is for a reason, presumably.
Yeah, I mean, interesting that you took it that way. Like, I found it to be very reassuring on Marcia's part. You know, like, we've gotten thus far very little idea of why Logan married Marcia to begin with. And I feel like this scene helps to illustrate why, you know, which is that a person like Logan wants many things in a partner, but one of the primary things I have to imagine is he just wants someone who's going to stick by him no matter how crazy things get, which I have to imagine they will be turbulent when you have someone in his position. So,
right.
So I found the scene to be, like, kind of heartwarming that, you know, she's sticking with, she's deciding to stay with a sociopath.
that's just funny to me, because to me, like, what she said was, when I'm with someone, I'm with them. And when I'm not, I'm not, was the part that was unsaid, you know?
Yeah. We have, like, sometimes we have, like, opposite interpretations of these scenes. Yeah.
So. But I also I think the more we see of Marcia, you're right, the more clear it becomes how their relationship works. And often, and including in this episode, we see her be very fierce in defense of Logan. Mm-hmm. Like, she really looks out for him when after the panel that we're going to talk about soon. She comes in and starts yelling at Shiv even before Logan has, like, she's scolding Shiv on his behalf. And it to me, it was like a very Wendy Murdoch, Rupert Murdoch. I mean, RIP, they're not married anymore, but how her public reputation was very much that the infamous occasion was when someone tried to pie him in public and she like came after them.
Yeah. That is the person you want in your corner, right? And I think she's kind of filling out that role pretty well so mm-hmm. far. So.
Yeah, and it was also like another time in this episode where she looks out for him is when they're at this panel that we haven't gotten to yet, and she tells him to quit looking around. And she says, you'll hurt your neck, but clearly it's like, you look shifty.
And he's being comically shifty, right? Like, he looks ridiculous doing what he's doing. So, yeah, she's a good check on that.
Yes, she's very good at stage managing him. And I also love, in the early parts of this, seeing Kendall spar with Stewie. We also see Lawrence, formerly of Valter, is there, but he doesn't get any lines. That was a bummer. Sad. I was happy to see him, but disappointed that it was just for a walk-on. But anyway, with Stewie, I think Kendall seems amused. Like, we didn't clip any of it, but it's like this is still friendly banter between them. It's like an echo of their old relationship, whereas it seems clear to me that Stewie legitimately hates Kendall's guts on a level deeper than business, which Kendall doesn't really get until Stewie makes a dead-in-the-water joke after the cruise story gets published.
Like, I don't know if I got
I think Kendall gets it.
I don't know if I got a hate, you know, vibe from it. It's just more like Kendall has irreparably damaged their relationship, right? Like, he can never trust, Stewie can never trust Kendall again. And they're just kind of living out that truth now. Mm-hmm. But from Kendall's perspective, right, it's interesting that there's asymmetry in the relationship, because from Kendall's perspective, everything Kendall has done has been reasonable, right? Like, mm-hmm. every step that Kendall took along this path that led them to where they are was the step he had to take, the reasonable step that someone in that position would take. But from Stewie's perspective, it's madness. Like, everything he's seeing, he's like looking at a piece of paper through a straw, you know, like you're seeing like a tiny fraction of what's happening. Mm-hmm. And so there is this like asymmetry in how they perceive the relationship. I think that's very obvious in these scenes. So,
yeah, I also think it's a little bit that like Kendall is trying to walk the line. I mean, leaving aside the, you know, extortionate level of his relationship with Logan in season two, for reasons that we know and no one else does, that Kendall has been trying to walk the line of being a kind of take no prisoners, like just bastard like Logan, mm-hmm. versus, as I was saying before, like the cool dude, like the awesome digital Gatsby. And so the problem is that he can't do both. Like, he can't be in both generations. He can't have a foot in both worlds, because, you know, if he wants to be digital Gatsby with Stewie, he can't also fuck him over in like an epic way.
Yeah.
And then think that they're still going to be palsy, because they're not.
It reminds me of something I learned at a youth group retreat 3 decades ago, Tara. people want to be loved. If they can't have love, they'll settle for respect. And if they can't have respect, they'll settle for fear.
Yep.
That's like Kendall's whole deal. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. He's moving through the stages.
He's moving through the stages. That's right. Yeah.
In the meantime, after having a worryingly compliant meeting with a white knight financier who might want to exert more control over the news business than is probably reasonable or ethical, a guy that Jerry had urged Logan to let Roman approach, Roman visits Jerry in private and tries to strike up a strategic partnership with her, though his pitch could use some polishing.
If anything happens to him, you're on the piece of paper as the next ruler of the kingdom.
I think I've been made well aware of how unlikely it is that will transpire.
Sure, right. But you know how you're so efficient and good at your job?
Well, thank you.
But also sort of like invisible, like wallpaper, like a boring old sort of nothing, like a competent kind of clever filing cabinet that everyone seems content to have around.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like a fucking rock star moron.
Right.
I mean, obviously, these are our public profiles, not our true essences.
I have thoughts, but continue.
Well, just floating, like, is there an angle here for a team-up? Like, me, kind of a Jagger Tarzan, fronting things up and swinging through trees with my little dick, singing and killing shit, and you, back home, cooking us soup and making sure the numbers are right. Huh? Rock star and the mole woman?
Wow, you're really selling me.
But it would be chair and CEO. Or CEO and chair. And you will get properly fuck you, fuck you. I don't even care about climate change. I'm in New Zealand with my own private army rich. Not like some pathetic asshole beach house on the vineyard rich.
It's late.
So I find the sex stuff that has been developing between these two in the past two episodes really compelling overall, but I'm also glad that the scene didn't end up there because it really wouldn't have fit. I think it's interesting to see that Jerry's willingness to participate in Roman's version of sex gave him the confidence to think further ahead in terms of his future at the company and really appreciate the value that she could bring to an alliance with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the show has already made the point with the sex. I think it's not like I don't think we're going to see that again, but it's like, okay, like this would be the third episode that they have some weird sex thing happening.
Yeah.
And the show has already hit that note. You already kind of get it. What's interesting to me is they haven't really spoken about it at all, right? Mm-hmm. Nothing like, hey, remember last night, that thing? That was awesome, or that was a mistake. Like both characters just accept it as like part of their relationship now. And I think that's it's interesting, but it's also like kind of reassuring in the sense that this might actually be, in a weird way, a good, probably the show's best pairing. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we've talked before about how Jerry is kind of like such a survivor in the company.
Yeah.
And I think part of how she got there was not to like open doors that Roy's want to keep closed, right? I mean, she's going to follow his lead to a point, and if he's not bringing it up, she's not bringing it up.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Mm. Also, to the end of that clip that we heard, I think there's definitely no mask on when non-fictional rich people talk to each other about the real-life climate apocalypse that is currently underway and the ways that they're going to respond to it, like with a private island in New Zealand. So I loved that that was the end of the pitch. And also, to back up to Roman's bathroom chat with the financier on which Greg walks in as it's wrapping up, Greg does coke now. That's new.
It's yet another way in which this innocent young boy has been corrupted by the Roys. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, Greg is a character who you very easily could have thought was doing coke from the first moment you saw him. You know, he's so like nervous and talkative. But yeah, it is kind of like, oh, wow, he's probably addicted to coke, which is kind of sad for somebody who overall started out as like fairly innocent when it comes to corporate ambition. I mean, he definitely had some ambitions, but like now for sure, I think that just like it's another way in which the Roys have absorbed him and made him part of their collective. So.
Mm-hmm. So Rhea has also been working hard on Logan's behalf to get the deal done, and she gets Nan to fly in. And I think another hilarious touch that defines Nan as a character is her reaction to the tacky lanyards for the event, which reminds us that she rarely, if ever, has to go anywhere that would require her to wear such a thing. And also bitching about the prices in the breakfast menu and just ordering tap water when she is personally worth at least millions and possibly billions.
Well, Tara, how do you think she got to be worth millions and possibly billions? You know,
Great point.
It wasn't by ordering the Voss at every chance she could get, you know?
You're right. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just got to go for the tap, save that cash. I love the long continuous shot of them walking into the building. Like they do this sometimes on the show where it'll be like a long continuous shot of a character's walking into a fairly elaborate environment. Season one did this when they went to that weird sex club. And it's just kind of like, hey, it's a long continuous shot of them going, and it basically is not only puts you there with the characters in real time, but it helps to convince you that this is an actual real life place, a real life event that's going on. And you got to think that that's expensive to do those kinds of shots. And they don't do them very often, but they do them. And when they do, I really enjoy it. And so I really like that shot of them walking into the building. It's a great piece of world building there. So
yeah, it's also always good when they show Holly Hunter in a two shot with anyone because she's so tiny, and like just the contrast between her and anyone else, like it gives her it really underscores her Iago-ness in this role. She's just like a tiny voice in their ear, directing them here and there.
Yeah.
So Nan knows she has leverage over Logan, given the timing, because, as we already said, he wants to sign the deal at this event. And so she's trying to revive some of her demands from the last episode. And at the same time, Kendall has his phone under the breakfast table and is compulsively refreshing New York Mag, their website, waiting for the story to load, which it does while Nan and Logan are obliviously negotiating. So the Waystar people scurry off to assess the damage, and an array of perspectives are shared.
Is it me or is this bullshit? Maybe this, maybe that?
Rum, careful.
Is this one of those things I need a woman to explain to me why it's bad? Shiv, is it bad?
Don't fucking ask me. Not your grope Geiger counter. What do you think, bro?
I think it's bad, but it's not that fucking bad.
Fuck. What's the protein?
They found a woman, Kirsten. She was working the cruises back in the mid-90s. Name checks, Lester McClintock.
She says Uncle Mo asked for sex with her and the other dancers to get their contracts renewed.
Were all of you in on this? Did you all know this was coming?
It's not ultra detailed.
Amazing.
So they fucked.
It says sexual exploitation.
Yeah, she's saying that she was one of the only ones who refused to sign an NDA and that we derailed her career as a result.
Is that it?
No, look, the old Houston story, the woman that jumped and drowned. Oh. What if something happened to her? It's just innuendo.
The dancer says that she heard stories of dozens of other women who actually signed the NDAs.
Okay, but in terms of actual stuff?
Well, there's not a lot of specifics. It's spooky words. You know, data wipes, NDAs, shadow logs, hiding cruise malpractice. But cold hard facts? It's one woman in the 1990s, not like 20 women 4 years ago.
Great. I'm glad we're able to do such good victim math.
So Kendall thinks they need to state unequivocally that this is not okay. Shiv orders that they condemn and move on, and Logan agrees with her since he feels this is all about him, meaning Logan, and that no one really cares about, as he puts it, these poor bitches. Oh, classy.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, this felt very true to life to me. Well, not true to life, but more like this felt very true to these characters, is that it is... purely a PR / strategy calculation, right? And not like, hey, what is the actual real life damage here? Out of anyone, Kendall seemed the most concerned about the actual people involved.
Yes.
But nobody else did. And I think it feels very much like what these characters, how they would interact in this situation. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was kind of like, it's kind of hilarious that he's like refreshing this. It's very comical that he's like refreshing this story while they're talking, like, hope it doesn't break. And then it like breaks during the meal, and like Rhea gets a text about it, or notification about it. And I mean, the whole setup is like very comical, Tara. The idea that like, hey, we're hoping that this extremely damaging story doesn't like mess up this deal, and like, please just sign the contract right now. The whole function of this episode, I think, is to show that just because the handshake has taken place doesn't mean that the deal is done. Right. That's ultimately, like, he left on such a triumphal note in the last episode. And I think what this episode does is saying, like, hey, it's more complicated than that. And
Yeah. Rhea's trying to get Nan to at least sign an LOI, which is a letter of intent. But, like, I mean, I kind of don't even know why, because you can back out of that so easily, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's really binding.
It is as binding as it sounds, which is it's called a letter of intent.
I intend to do this totally.
Well, speaking of people who intended to do things.
Yes.
Our Kickstarter backers intended to back us, and they did, supporting this podcast and making it possible. We got to thank all the people who donated to our show to make it possible. This week, a few names: Ron Harshman, Etienne Gagne. Kendrick Martin, Katie Struzend, Rhea Johnson, and Danish Syed. Thanks so much for your donations. Tara, you have some names?
I do. Thank you so much also to Kip Pilalis, Sean Hillary, my other podcast spouse, Sarah D. Bunting, Jody Church, and James Stout. Thanks to all of you very, very much for helping us make this podcast possible.
Y'all are awesome. And one thing that's been great about the audience for this podcast, first of all, a lot of the names we've been reading are people who I recognize, you know, people who have donated to a lot of my projects in the past. But what's great is that this podcast, every episode, has received more downloads than the previous episode. So it's like growing. Like, people are learning about the podcast. Like, one thing that's great is, I think right now, if you go to Apple Podcasts and you search for Succession, we are the first result.
Get out of here.
I don't know how that happened. But I'm gonna, like, we're gonna ride that as long as we possibly can. And so a lot of people are discovering the show through that, I think, and many and like a few other channels. And so the people who donated via Kickstarter, they basically made it possible for all these other new people who discovered us through other channels to like discover the show and listen to it and enjoy it. And we really appreciate it. You know, like it was these people's act of faith that brought us here today. So.
Absolutely. And but since we're talking about it, we should also thank all of the people who are telling their friends that they should listen, because that's got to be a big part of it, too. So,
yes, all the people out there who are telling their friends. And if you're not one of them, consider becoming one of them. So anyway.
All right. Back to this episode. So with the Roys now radioactive, Shiv and Rhea meet in private. Rhea lets it be known that if the Pierce deal is still going to happen, what with all the cousins getting skittish, Shiv, the acceptable face of the Roy family, has to be out front.
So I love this conversation between Shiv and Rhea, and it's just kind of the two of them talking in a way where they can be pretty honest with each other, you know, which is not something that happens too often in the show. She's like, oh, yeah, of course, you're avoiding us because we're radioactive, and she's able to just say that to her face. And Rhea kind of telling Shiv, like, hey, maybe this is not the time you want to pull rank about whether you should participate. You know, like, there's a time to accumulate political capital and there's a time to spend it. And it's just these, you know, two people kind of trying to figure out their place in all this mess that's happening. And I really appreciated that. But also, one thing that I think now looking back on episodes 1 through 5 and now this one, that has been a theme is Shiv's waffling. You know, like a few episodes ago, I said, like, hey, this is a career limiting move Shiv is making by like, she's in, she's out, she's in, she's out. What is she really doing? And then this episode too, you know, she has an opportunity to really help. But she's like, no, not going to do it, you know, because I wasn't brought in early enough. I wasn't briefed. And you're just going to have to suffer without me because you did not pay homage. You did not give me the proper amount of respect. And so she's, you know, she's kind of like, I'm not really in, I'm not really at, like, and it, she's kind of like a female Hamlet, you know, like she doesn't, is he going to kill the uncle? Or is he not going to kill the uncle? Like, is she going to try to take her place on the throne or is she not? Like she, looking back at the arc of these first 6 episodes, it really very much feels like she was a waffler. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I can certainly empathize with her not wanting any of this blowback to hit her because she, you know, she really wasn't involved in the company in any way when any of this was happening. But at the same time, if you want to get in, like this is the cost of doing business, literally. Like you can't decide, I don't want to get involved in the grubbiness of this, or I don't want to be your token lady. Like those are not options for you. If this is the path that you want to be on, you could have stayed working in Gil's campaign. You didn't, you decided to blow it up. So it's either this or, you know, go get a job at that gross coffee shop or don't, or never work. I mean, that's also an option for you, obviously, but you know, as we've said many times, that she's interested in power. And I also feel like in this conversation, she's really leaning back and letting Rhea tell her what she should do instead of proactively deciding on a path. And I feel like that also betrays that Shiv is not as confident as she wants people to think.
I think that's astutely observed, Tara.
So, although Shiv had earlier declined to let herself take on any of this taint on the basis that she hadn't been briefed, with minutes to go before the panel, she changes her mind on Rhea's strong direction and announces that she does want to do it.
I think this is the first time I've heard anyone use the phrase, take on any of this taint.
Well,
so, well put, Tara.
Thank you so much. After some wrangling, Logan signs off on all three Roy children taking the stage, all three who are present, of course, following Tom, who disastrously ends his talk with a new tagline that was already awful when it was, we hear for you, H-E-A-R, but is even worse when either he or Greg misspell it on visual aids as, we hear for you, H-E-R-E. Okay, fine, it's not really much worse than the Argestes slogan we see on a theater marquee, which is, see, hear, do, be. Wow. real weak.
Compelling.
Yeah. Anyway, the Roy children, they're sent out on strict instructions to adhere to the company's official response to the cruise scandal. You might forget that it's condemn and move on after hearing Shiv and Kendall on stage.
I mean, I think the thing for us is we don't want to simply condemn and move on. You know, we'll want to look into this, investigate it thoroughly, and then absolutely do the right thing. I think we all have the same view on that.
Uh-huh. And give us an insight. Tough day for the company, Siobhan?
Well, obviously I've been given the privilege of growing up around the business whilst also being able to plow my own furrow on the outside.
She's been working in politics for 10 years, so don't hold out for a straight answer.
Oh, I'll give you a straight answer. Look, obviously, as you say, yes, it's been a tough day for the company. Sometimes there are not errors, not misjudgments in corporate governance, but...
Catastrophes?
Well, no, because it's not really about corporate procedures here, is it? It's about human decency that transcends management structures. I mean, you know, that's what's so abhorrent about these stories when they come to light in whatever sector. And sometimes it feels like, my God, it's everywhere.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, the language, I just would say, yeah, we don't know. Right now, we just don't know. We haven't started the necessary investigation, so that language is, but absolutely on the sentiment.
I think he's telling me to calm down.
No, hell no. No, I'm not. If this stuff is true, doesn't matter to the victim that these were isolated incidents that happened, you know, many decades ago, right?
Right, and just because it did happen 25 years ago is not a reason to simply condemn and just move on.
No, absolutely not.
Shiv ends up saying she's more aggressive than Kendall about what action Waystar should take internally, suggesting a good old-fashioned dinosaur cull. She smoothly denies under the moderator's follow-up question that she means getting rid of Logan, but he still scowls at this line. However, Nan loves it.
So I think this time that Shiv has on stage is the most poised and confident we've ever seen her. This is the first time I've seen her in action and plausibly play a role that would make me think like this person could actually be the CEO. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, sure. In that she just is talking and not really saying much. and I think she and Kendall are trying to give the impression that they're like, that they're both divergent and united in their response to this. I mean, the writing of this scene is really good. We only clipped a little bit of it. It really goes on. But I do think that she's good at, you know, calling her the acceptable face of the Roy family is like, it's true, but it's also kind of a diss in that, like, it doesn't necessarily suggest that she's any different from anyone else. It's just that like she's the most palatable. She's has the best mask. And I definitely think that's true. And it does suggest that she is better poised to be the next generation of the company than anyone else.
She's just very smooth, you know, like very poised. Like she knew how to deflect. She knew how to parry. She knew how to take on directly when necessary. I was pretty impressed. She's
much more effortlessly charming when she tries to turn it on versus Kendall, who always seems like desperate and sweaty and weird.
Yeah.
Like that moment in the last episode where after Naomi gives the blessing, which is the Shakespeare line, and he's like, hey, that was really cool. It's like, shut up.
What are you so like? Are you like a poetess or something?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Shiv would never do that. She's out here trying to get dick. She's not trying to put people off. So afterward, opinions among the Roys about Shiv's performance are mixed. Marsha and Kendall side with Logan, scolding Shiv for going too far. Roman, who had initially, before Logan's arrival, said that Shiv's line played and that there isn't any press there covering it anyway, once Logan does arrive, joins the group in attacking Shiv, and then Logan smacks him hard enough to knock out one of his teeth. And I thought at first he was clowning, but then it did seem like, no, he really did lose a tooth. Yikes. Mm.
I like how Kendall snapped right into action, you know, defending Roman from his father. It felt like something that had happened before in their life, you know?
Yeah, well, and it's happened before that we've seen in the show. It's been a while since Logan struck anyone at all. In the last time, which was in season one, when the victim was Kendall's son, Iverson, at Thanksgiving, it seemed like he could partly blame his action on his ill health. And Logan's still not doing great. We see him earlier in this episode just spontaneously vomit in the middle of a dining room. But there's really no gray area about whether he meant to hit Roman, like there was maybe with Iverson. And it's also impossible to imagine him striking any of his other children this way, I thought. And it adds some dark color to what we now know about what gets Roman off.
Yeah. I mean, this episode really is about the decline of Logan, in my opinion, right? Like his health and mental state seems to be in decline. And we see multiple instances of evidence of that. So.
Yeah, I mean, the language, like saying that he's radioactive now, like this is also, if you watched Chernobyl, the HBO documentary earlier this year, like that's one of the things, spontaneously just vomiting because your body is falling apart. That's what happens when you have radiation sickness. So I think that's not an accidental choice of words or ailment that they gave him. Like he's rotting from the inside.
Fair enough. So how does the episode wrap up, Tara?
So Shiv's crisis management doesn't extend to stopping the comics attack on Waystar at the Argestes roast that night. Disgusted by a joke about forcible blowjobs on the Hindenburg, Nan storms out, Logan chasing after her to try to minimize the damage. But Nan sees through everything. She calls out Rhea for her off-the-books meeting at Waystar back in Safe Room, episode 4, demands Rhea's resignation from the position of CEO on the spot, and reneges on the deal.
Yeah, and the final image is of Logan Roy screaming in an impotent fashion at Nan's limo driving away. I mean, it is such a powerful image considering what we saw last episode, right? Where he felt like, hey, like money wins, I'm on top of the world, like, and now just being reduced to begging for his life. It's so undignified, the most undignified we've ever seen him before. So.
Yeah, I mean, to use the parlance of our time, he looks like a cuck.
Wow. Right. Is that the parlance of our time, Tara?
Isn't it?
I fair enough. Yeah. Okay. I can't deny it. So anyway, before I get to winners and losers, any overall thoughts on the episode? I'll just say from my perspective, I didn't see it playing out this way just because... I just didn't know that this was where it would go. Probably because I had very few thoughts on where it would go, because I was so dumbstruck by the end of the last episode where Logan seems to have triumphed and Shiv is vanquished. But nope, turns out it's much more complicated than that. Triumphing is more complicated and Shiv might not be out of the mix quite yet. And so I really didn't see a lot of this coming. But I am kind of a fan of how the show is able to continually surprise me. This episode was much less uncomfortable to watch than last week's episode. Overall, what'd you think of it, Tara?
Yeah, I agree. It definitely couldn't stay at that level of where Turnhaven was. But I mean, I've kind of given up on predicting where the show is going to go. It always surprises me, including here in that I wasn't necessarily even expecting Shiv to be doing any work at Waystar anymore at all. Like, I kind of thought we would see her doing something totally else or figuring out what her next move was going
to
be.
Yeah, I thought we might never see Nan or Rhea again. Like, that was distinctly possible to me. Now it seems like they might be significant players through the rest of the season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
It was good to see Stewie again.
Yeah.
Oh. And get a reminder that that's also another front that the Roys are fighting on.
Yeah. I just love the Stewie-Kendall interaction. From the first moment we meet them where Stewie is stealing a pastry out of a coffee shop display case, I've always enjoyed their banter and dynamic. So I really love that that's back in this episode.
Yep.
All right, Tara, every week on The Sweet Smell of Succession, we like to choose winners and losers. We choose a winning Roy, a losing Roy, and a winning non-Roy, and a losing non-Roy. This week, you're winning Roy, Tara.
My winning Roy is Greg, and here's why. Because he's on coke. Just kidding. It's because despite having been closer to the cruise scandal than virtually anyone else, he is not part of those conversations at all. He successfully has... he's insulated himself like a true Roy. He's stayed away. He's dealing with this much lower level dumb issue with the tagline and Tom's dumb talk. And he still manages to be a true believer when Tom is wrapping up his talk and in front of the screen that's misspelled. We see people around Greg in the audience, like, openly just laughing at Tom because he's such a clown. And Greg just looks rapt. He looks so proud. I hate to say it about anyone that's in the organization, but Greg truly is living his best life. And he gets invited on the trip, and even Shiv doesn't. Like, Greg, at least at that point, was ahead of her in the pecking order. So who could have guessed? Gregory.
I'm just going to say something, Tara. I don't know if it was misspelled. You know, I think maybe they're like, hey, if we use H-E-R-E, like, that also works. And it kind of sounds like H-E-A-R. You know, I'm not convinced that it was misspelled. Because it sounds like this kind of street slang, like, we here for you, you know?
Oh, I know. But I thought that was in their conversation about it, that they decide that's the secondary.
Mm. Yeah, maybe they switched it at the last minute, I guess.
As I said, they're both very bad. Either way it's spelled, it's terrible.
My winning Roy of this week's episode is Shiv. I think that because of her interceding at the last minute, getting on stage, delivering a solid message for Nan, like, despite the dinosaur calling line, like, she has proven herself somewhat to Logan, and even though that didn't really do that much good, I think she's back in the mix when, as you said at the end of the last episode, we thought that she might have been completely out of the mix, like, permanently removed from the mix. So for the reason that she's back in, she has a chance. Shiv is my winning Roy of the week. Let's talk about losing Roy of the week. Who is your losing Roy of the week, Tara?
Well, Logan. I mean, not to belabor the point, we already just said he's left shouting into the wind after Nan, who's, you know, ruined his life and collapsed their deal. But I am going to give an honorable mention to Tom, who is dismayed when he finds out from Greg that in his room he did not get champagne and a paperweight as his gift. He got fruit and nuts, and it was impossible to clip because it's totally a visual moment. But what Matthew McFadden does with, like, how sad he is about this, like, it truly is a masterclass. He is so good in this role, being such a doofus. I just love to watch him. So, you know, especially in defeat. So Logan, but also Tom.
Yeah. And I got to say, I agree with you on Logan being the losing Roy. Just that final sequence is it's going to be, like, indelibly etched into my brain of him just shouting after this limo. Mm-hmm. I don't know where the Waystar Royco story is going to end, but
yeah,
I can't imagine it will be super great. And if it isn't, that will be one of the key images and moments of the downfall of the company. Yep. But I agree with you that Tom is a great honorable mention. I mean, he had this terrible time on stage with this, you know, the tagline. I mean, I almost lost it when he walked it. Like, they don't call much attention to it, right? They just, like, the camera pans to the left and you see the tagline for, like, 3 seconds, maybe.
Barely.
I love how subtle that is. And then he gets cock blocked by Shiv. You know, he's trying to sleep with that important woman and she says, please don't do that. But on the plus side, you know, Tom does get some redemption because Shiv reaffirms towards the end of the episode that she's at the very least mildly jealous of him, which I couldn't tell if that was just Shiv being a possessive person overall or if she actually was expressing her affection for Tom. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, it could be both. It could also be that she knows that's a good way of controlling him.
Fair enough. Always playing the angles. All right. Winning non-Roy of the episode.
I mean, I have Stewie, but I guess it's like Stewie and Sandy, because with this deal falling apart, it puts them in a much better position. With the Pierce deal falling apart, that is, it puts them in a better position in the proxy war. So I feel like we may see more of Stewie and Sandy in the episodes to come as things ramp up.
I'll say my winning non-Roy is Nan, who seems to have put a kibosh on this deal that was going to wreck her legacy, which is what we've been told is one of the most important things to her. So who knows? Like, maybe that will change next week when she comes back to the table. We have no idea where that's going. But at this moment, Nan looks like she's sitting pretty with 8 quarters of straight losses.
And if she also knows that the proxy war is going on, which is public knowledge, maybe she goes to Stewie and Sandy and says, hey, do you want to buy us?
Yeah, maybe. Losing non-Roy. What do you think, Tara?
Well, Rhea, I mean, she gets fired in the last moments of the episode, although they've done a really good job establishing that she and Logan have a good relationship. They seem to like each other. And so I wonder if the whole point of bringing Shiv out for our Jesties was to, you know, be the female face of Waystar. Maybe Rhea gets a new job, but she's woman at Waystar and has much more experience handling stuff like this, and could definitely do a better job than Shiv.
Literally seems like she gets along better with Logan, right, than Shiv.
Yeah.
So, and I agree with you. Her getting summarily fired by Nan makes her the losing non-Roy in my book. But yeah, I mean, I didn't even think about the fact that Logan might hire her. That didn't, you know, that's something you brought up to me. You're like, this is bad for Shiv because Rhea is now a player in the CEO games. And Rhea is losing Don Roy, but maybe not for long. We'll see.
Yep.
So those are our winners and losers of the week. Tara, starting this week, we are at the suggestion of Vigard from Norway. We are now choosing a quote of the week. What was your quote?
Well, let's hear it.
But if we took a position of fuck it.
The context of this line is the financier that Roman has gone after is from, it seems, some kind of former Soviet republic. It's not clear. He mentions Baku, but he like challenges Roman, do you even know where I'm from? And Roman's like, Stanford, because he doesn't. But when he goes to report to Jerry afterwards and says that the strategic partnership that he, this guy with the money wants to strike is like, we'll invest in your papers if you're very favorable to our country and give us good PR. They know it's bad, but Roman's not so sure it is so bad if they take the position of fuck it. And it's like, it's a good line, but it's also like, 50% of it is the good writing and 50% is Kieran Culkin's performance of it. So that's why I wanted to play it, because it just made me laugh so much.
It's a good choice for quote of the week. My quote of the week is from Frank early on the episode when he's trying to get Shiv to learn more about the business. He says, quote, "Now, I like to recite Prufrock internally while we check that we're GAAP compliant, but feel free to use whatever method you prefer to numb the pain." And which is definitely something that I will consider whenever I'm engaging in something that is extremely mind-numbing and hopeless. So
this is why he's friends with the Pierces. It's kind of stuff like this.
Yeah, no, and we actually didn't talk about this, but there was a couple episodes ago, there was like a reference to Coriolanus as well, right? Which is like Frank says Coriolanus, and like Logan gives him the fuck off face. Frank is very well read. We see evidence of that, and he's a Prufrock fan as well. So, I appreciate his constant literary references, and I want to encourage them. So that's why Frank gets my quote of the week. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of The Sweet Smell of Succession. Find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. You can email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. This episode was powered by Simplecast. If you're looking to start up your own podcast, check out simplecast.com. It's a great choice with lots of awesome resources and features. Simplecast.com is how we power The Sweet Smell of Succession. Until next week, Tara, where can we find more of your work on the internet?
Well, you can hear me every week on the Extra Hot Great podcast. That's at extrahotgreat.com. And you can see me flogging all my various ventures at my Twitter account, which is TaraArianO, Tara Ariano.
And find all my stuff on Twitter at Dave Chensky. That's Dave Chen, SKY. And I also host another show called Culturally Relevant, where I interview very interesting and well-accomplished people. You can find that at culturallyrelevantshow.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.